time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Folks, welcome back to the ENBC Network. I'm your host, Hurricane H, and today we're talking about perfectionism, an endless chase for just right that often costs us peace of mind. My guest, Dr. Tara Cosino, is a clinical psychologist, meditation teacher, a perfectionist coach, with over 20 years experience helping high achievers turn pressure into purpose. She's also on staff at Harvard University and author of the new book that we're going to cover today, The Perfectionist Dilemma. Now, that's big. She has another book. We're going to talk about that as well. So without any further ado, Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Hurricane. Happy to be here.
My pleasure. And you know what? This is a big topic. I mean, you know, and I think we live in a world that it almost enhances this idea that perfectionism is something we have to have, right? But it is, I think it's not just a word, it's a whole, you know, behavior, right? There's a lot that goes into it. Your expertise is definitely in the realm of psychology. And so you know this, the behavior, how we operate. So before we get any deeper, just the story, like what got you into this and, you know, why perfectionism, you know, as your specialty?
Well, I have to admit, I mean, I'm a perfectionist, or maybe I'm a recovering perfectionist, was raised by a perfectionist, actually both sides of the family, couldn't really get away from it. And I just happen to work in an area where there's lots of higher education, there's lots of people who are entrepreneurs or C-level people that come to therapy when they're really stressed out. And many of them over the years, you know, they're these wonderful high achievers, but they actually never take a break and they're sort of compulsive about what they do. And many identify it as perfectionism. Some people don't. They're like, I'm not a perfectionist. But then, and then you hear their stories and you're like, no, I think you're a perfectionist. So it's just been sort of in the soup that I've been marinating in my career, more or less, with lots of high achievers. And I just found a passion for it, really.
Well, so let's go right into it. Perfectionism. I mean, that's like it, as far as I know, just maybe a basic English, is that someone who seeks perfection. Is there such a thing as perfection? Because I personally don't think there is, you know, because I think we're human. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of issues, I would say, or flaws, or whatever you want to call them. And so is, you know, let's define it from a clinical, you know, perspective, from your world. What is that?
I mean, well,
how do we define that?
I have my own definition for it. What might not be like a research-based definition, but essentially perfectionism is this paradox created by a need for belonging or a fear of rejection, paired with these unrealistic expectations for achievement and approval.
Ooh.
That sap your life force, basically your energy. So I add in that part, you know, is that it really saps you of your life force and energy over time. Now, you know, the researchers wouldn't add that in their definition, but I put it in because I do the face-to-face work. And, you know, in its simplest level, perfectionism is like protection. People adopt it, they absorb it, they use it as a way to protect themselves, to defend themselves, and it becomes a way of being. It becomes a habit. there's nothing necessarily wrong with trying to figure out how to survive in your childhood, your adolescence, or your workplace, but it becomes a way of protecting yourself from failure or rejection, reputation damage, any of those things that people are naturally afraid of. And so it kind of makes sense. And it's often people's favorite flaw, you know, their humble brag is about, oh yeah, I'm a perfectionist. And then I'm like, okay, how is that going for you in your life? You know, and then you start to kind of look under the hood and you're like, oh wow, it sounds really tense.
I think I've experienced some of it personally. I mean, like in at work, you always try to do the best and you want to do more than the best. And, you know, and by the way, it's from a motivation or inspiration piece. I mean, yes, you want to achieve as much as you said. High achievers, they try to strive for that, right? But, you know, at what cost and what does it take and does it really work? And, you know, what are the ramifications around you and so on and so forth? I mean, you said that you were yourself, yes. You know, one and you kind of been given that from your, you know, hierarchy there in the family, right? So let's talk about that journey. Like, you know, how was the experience of living with a perfectionist and in a perfectionism world in a way that really influenced you to even be one? And then kind of like, wait a minute, yeah, there's more to this. So let's guide, because I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that are in the same boat, that are in the same shoes that you've been on in and in. And so how does that work for all of us out there?
Well, listen, it's really diverse. You know, perfectionism isn't just one thing. And even researchers who try to define it have all these sort of subtypes that, you know, that they've identified. I would say, like, my personal story is, so I was raised by a German mom that had to have everything like neat. We couldn't go out and play until we dusted the shelves. I mean, really almost a little bit OCD-ish in a way, but that was like, so I just grew up with that, is that everything had to be in its place and everything had to be clean and proper. And we always, even though we really struggled, we were on food stamps, nobody had any idea that we were struggling, because we presented ourselves as really well put together and pretty savvy. And so it became this veneer, you know, maybe even dipping into a little bit of imposter syndrome. And that was just how we grew up. And it was a survival strategy. My mom, you know, she ended up being a single mom and had to raise us, but it was very much, you know, everything, we had rules. There were just so many rules growing up. I actually, as a teenager, really rebelled against that, but you can't help but absorb that. And some of the research does show, like with twin studies, you know, how much is inherited, and it's about 30 to 40% heritability, which is similar to other kinds of traits. So you could actually just have it in your gene pool, you know, that this need to have everything nice and neat. So there's that. But then there's what you were mentioning right at the beginning, Hurricane, which is like, you can't really even get away from it in our society and our culture, because we're just being constantly fed 24/7 what it means to be successful and wealthy and attractive. And, you know, we just absorb this idea that we have to keep doing more and being better. So we can't really get around it just based on where, you know, looking at social media feeds or ads or billboards or your peers. So it's hard to get away from.
So that's just it's going to sound like a funny question. I mean, is it a clinical diagnosis? I mean, being perfectionist, I mean, is that an actual thing, a diagnosis? Like it's almost like an illness in a way, or is it just a characteristic of behavior that we just have that might lead to some psychology, you know, piece of it?
No, it's a really good question. So there's no diagnosis of perfectionism. Perfectionism is considered transdiagnostic, meaning that it's an element that will show up in a number of conditions like depression, anxiety, suicidality, OCD, obsessive compulsive personality disorder. You'll see these characteristics and traits across the various mental health disorders.
So it does actually touch on more than just, it's not the obvious. There's a deeper meaning to it, and it's actually affecting a lot more people than we can think of, right? I mean, it's not what we know, literally, as to just
what you expressed here. Well, so the surveys show, so there's been some really great research. Again, can't help it but go back to the research, and I wrote a book on it, so I had to know what I was doing. But they've been doing studies, you know, often with college students. They're always the participants in a lot of studies. But over 30 years, they've been really tracking these traits of perfectionism, and they've kind of narrowed it down to several types. So one type of perfectionism, which I think you and I probably would identify, is self-oriented perfectionism. You strive for excellence, you set the bar for yourself, you're trying to achieve some sort of goal, and you know, failure is not an option, you know, and that's, you know, a lot of people can identify with that. It's like your own set of values and great, like no one's taking away the value, striving for the value of excellence, but it can become rigid, right? It can become very singularly focused in a way. There's another type that's called other-oriented perfectionism. And this is, I think, what we see, like, in, you know, in the movies, like, you know, the mean boss, you know, the Devil Wears Prada, you know, Meryl Streep's character, Miranda, you know, I mean, you know, we have all these sort of images. We can even think of Martha Stewart or the Monica on Friends. You know, there's these sort of like, you know, they want other people to be doing everything, putting things in their place, that sort of thing. So there's that. And then there's what's called socially prescribed perfectionism. And this is what I call the compare and despair perfectionism, that you are actually comparing yourself to other people, to their achievements, to how they look. And this is the one that the researchers have identified where there are the most vulnerabilities to mental health concerns, is, you know, when you're comparing yourself all the time to other people. And that obviously, if you don't measure up in some way in your own perception, it can lead to, you know, self-doubt, poor self-confidence, shame, all sorts of things. And so that's the one that I feel like is the most pernicious. And if you're on social media a lot, it's going to reinforce that. So that's the one that I feel like is a little bit tricky. And then there's another type, which is self-presentation style perfectionism, which I definitely have because that's what my mother taught us, you know, is that you always had to kind of, you know, look good in church, look good in the community, yeah. You know, present yourself part. Well, you know. So there's all these sort of different flavors of it. And I think most people can identify with some or kind of see it on a spectrum, like, oh yeah, I've got a little bit of that and I have a little bit of that too. And it comes out really in certain kinds of contexts. Right? It might not be there all the time, but it might show up in the workplace or it might show up in a competitive situation.
Well, doctor, I'm listening to you. I mean, it sounds like I think every one of us out there can identify to one of the others, you know, that you just mentioned. And if not a mixture of all those, especially nowadays, as you said. And I want to take some time to talk about the, I guess, the new generation and the social world that we live in, the social media specifically. But you mentioned movies and stuff. This is not new. I mean, from the onset of filmmaking, I think, and TV, right, you had looks and things that, you know, have been almost portrayed and presented to us as the way to do things. And so many families would actually identify and, hey, you should look like this, you should dress like this, you should do that stuff. And that's the way, even in restoration and in hospitality, right? There's a way to do things. There's an etiquette to everything. Now, some of it's like, well, it says culture, this, the other, but it could be leading to people like really being that fanatic in how they operate and how they move. I mean, OCD, I mean, like you have to put things, I mean, sometimes I do it. I mean, if you come to my office, it cannot be messy. Everything's got to be in this place. If something moves, I'll literally fix it back.
No, I'm the same way.
So you know, like, I mean, I'm telling, like, I think we all have a little bit of that, you know, problematic. Is it a problem? That's the question. I mean, is it healthy? You know, that's the other question, right? I mean, I think overdoing anything, right, in extreme measures will always turn out to be bad. And you just mentioned a few diagnoses that, you know, depression, anxiety, all these things that can be, I guess, the highlighter or the underlining condition, if you want to call it, of whatever the behavior is that we're talking about, right? Now, perfectionist is someone that's really seeking that. I mean, is that you did mention it's kind of, it could be even genetically handed down to you, but really, how does someone kind of like really just think, I mean, from a psychological perspective, you know, we're not born with it. you know, you take this behavior from your surroundings, again, parents, TV, all the stuff, but then it's a choice too. Like, why do we kind of, is there a study in your own expertise here that proves that we actually the ones who decide whether we want to be or not? I mean, because we have people that actually are completely careless, you know, and they just want to live free. They want to do stuff. They don't want to, follow any structure in society. And as you mentioned, the word rebel, you know, so they rebel, you know, against everything, right? And so we have that. So what gives someone can actually be that way, like in very solid into like this world, and someone's like, you know what, I don't care about the rules, I just want to be me. And we do hear that also in psychology, like, be you, feel you, you know, don't worry about the rest. So why is there a contrast there?
Well, so I don't think it's so simple. I don't think people choose to be perfectionists. I actually really have come around to seeing it as a part of you, like you might want to think of it as a pattern or an inner algorithm, a coping strategy, a schema that you adopted or learned, not necessarily consciously, but as a way to cope. So, you know, I think of, you know, so I work in higher ed, you know, and sometimes there'll be students that they're afraid to look at their grades. And the only way that they know that they're actually have not failed is that they can register for classes the next semester, because the fear of a failure or not doing well is so great. Like, their identity is wrapped around, you know, having to be the straight A student or to be perfect. When perfectionism is a problem, like, that's the perspective. Like, there's no necessarily upside from perfectionism. It's really an extreme. Like, that's the dogma, that's the ISM, right? In perfectionism, it's an extreme. And I think Hurricane, with the tricky thing is that it gets people places, right? That striving, you know, it gets you what you want, but maybe with a lot of suffering. And so when perfectionists that I tend to work with, or they'll come to like my workshop, I run workshops called Overcoming Perfectionism and Befriending the Inner Critic. And they're like, well, this is what got me here. If I didn't have this striving or this compulsion, then I wouldn't be here today. And I always say, yeah, I'm sure that there's a part of you that really got you here. But let me ask you, how do you feel? Like, just slow down, tune in. How do you feel on the inside? And sometimes people are like, I don't know how I feel. And I'm like, exactly. Because they've literally cut themselves off from sort of their heart space, from, you know, feeling bodily sensations. It's just, they've been just so much in their head, hyper-focused. And so I usually say the litmus test is actually tune in and say, how are you feeling? And if you're feeling scared or tense or, you know, nervous or afraid or shamed, whatever, like, that's not good. You know, that's telling me that you're overcompensating in some way, and that the perfectionism is trying to protect you from an underlying fear. And then you kind of is like, oh, well, what are you afraid of? And that's also hard sometimes for people who are always trying to present themselves as in control and on top of things. Often they don't have a lot of access to what's going on under the hood, you know?
Doctor, so it's a huge thing. I mean, being in business personally, and, you know, for myself, and working in the corporate, I mean, and being in a leadership position, I mean, that's just on the world, you know, of business, right? But from a personal perspective, as you said, you know, we do have those expectations from your parents. You want to do this, you want to have the, like you mentioned, grades, right? That's a big deal. But I do have one thing that I really, personally, I use as a tactic for me. I mean, failure is really necessary. And someone will probably argue with me right now, like, hey, what are you saying? You know, I'm all for success. I mean, that's the whole thing. But I literally give the analogy that it's one coin. I mean, you cannot have success without any failure. And you cannot even understand what success is if you didn't fail, because, you know, it'll be like, you know, understanding there's a light if you've never seen darkness, right? So it's
100%. People who struggle with perfectionism actually need to practice failure. They need to have these experiences in life, and then they need to understand what the consequences are of failing. You know, it might mean that you actually have to do something over again, or you have to pivot. You have to think of something different. It's really important to have those experiences in the world. And I totally agree with you. You can't succeed unless you actually know failure.
Thank you. And you said something very, like that question you said, like, how do you feel? How are you feeling? Again, folks watching right now, listening in anytime, you know, when this show airs and beyond, ask that, I mean, literally pause a minute, because you made me think about it. I mean, like, how you feel? I mean, that's deep. I mean, you'll have to take some moment to just review everything, because, you know, you start putting things in perspective, like I might be really needing help here, because again, we all kind of have that. And, you know, maybe some more than others, you know, some people will have like I want everything done. I want even I think our training now in the world, I mean, from school to workspace, right? It's all that, like you got to show up at this time. You cannot be late. You cannot do this. You cannot do this. It's always like, you got to be on point at everything. And you checklist this, check that. So I think that all defines us as humans being a little bit of a perfectionist, because we are almost not trained to be that way. It's like
we are totally habituated to it. And when we have this habit of perfectionism, if you will, or trying to do the right thing all the time, it causes so much underlying tension that we're actually really not connected to. And, you know, from a clinical perspective, it's like, you really actually have to make that pause and say, and tune in, like, how are you feeling? What is happening? What do you need? If you are nervous, okay, that's normal in most circumstances, but often people are terrified actually of, not meeting their numbers, let's say, or their milestones, or getting reprimanded in front of peers or colleagues. And some companies are really shaming and how they try to supposedly motivate people, or try to, you know, stir that competitive. I mean, I have a lot of people who actually are at those top consulting firms, you know, they're working 14, 16 hours a day. And I'm, you know, it is when they can find the time to have a therapy appointment, that is, you know, because it's so difficult. But what happens is, even if they enjoy the job, or they're making good money, and, you know, they're finally able to kind of, you know, buy things and like, whatever, great. But what's happening underneath is that their cortisol levels are so high, and we adapt to those high levels of cortisol that makes us more vulnerable to further stress, to illness, to burnout. And cortisol is basically your body's way of asking for more fuel, right? It's like the body's way of making glucose. And so when our cortisols are really high, and we've adapted over many years to that, it makes you actually more vulnerable. So that's why you need to actually pay attention to the body. And that sometimes can be a hard place to start with people who identify with perfectionism, because they're not really connected.
Well, doctor, you know, I have over 30 years in sales, corporate sales, and targets, goals, this, and being, again, in leadership roles and having to be in charge of your P&L and all this stuff. And, you know, I've had my share of, you know, I guess, reprimanding, terminations, all the stuff. It comes with the territory. It is very taxing on the mind, on the body, and, you know, you got to do it correctly. I mean, of course, sometimes you have no choice. It's company policy, this, the other, and you're right. There's ways to do this. And even in my early days as just a regular agent being in the industry, I've been in position where, you know, you get into this meeting and, like, you know, you're sweating because, you know, someone's going to walk in and start, like, going crazy on everybody in there because we haven't done this or did. And so it does cause this, and so it kind of, like, you start trying to almost defend yourself by, like, making it work. And so in a way, it's a good thing. I mean, you can be successful and you can do stuff and you can set up some, but not on the depends and the detriment of your own health and your well-being. And to your point, sometimes you don't realize that until it's too late, and now you're having cardio problems, you're having stress, you have, you know, high blood pressure, and all these things can happen. People eat a lot, they are stressed out. And it took me time to actually become aware of these things myself, and yes. I kind of have that, and we've had a lot of shows actually about work balance, mm-hmm. about, you know, burnouts and things like that. I think that all comes from this element, or this dilemma that you refer to in your book, because it is a dilemma, like, how do I live the life and achieve and do all the stuff without having to extremely do it and then become on the difficult side of it, right? So go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, when people say, you know, going back to that question, well, how do I know if perfectionism is helping or harming me? And I say, well, tune in, like, how are you feeling? And when somebody can say, I'm feeling really excited, I know that this is going to be hard work, but I have this goal and I'm loving what I'm learning, even if I don't know what I'm doing just yet, that is a completely different experience than the person that's saying, I'm tense, I have to get this done. If I don't get this right, there's something wrong with me. You know, maybe there's a fatal flaw that I'm not aware of in myself. And you can start to see that the it's very taxing, you know, on the mental health side. I had a young man this week who is, you know, he's applying for the jobs in the business world, right? And, you know, he's got this question, do I stay in academics or do I go into industry and all of this? And so he's spreading himself all over the place. He's trying to kind of hedge his bets, you know, so he's applying to jobs in both areas. And of course, that's going to be really consuming. But, you know, he found out somehow that he didn't make the first cut. And he knows it's part of the process. Like, you're not going to make every cut. But he really spent several days going, like, it was like the inner critic just got so activated. What is wrong with me? What could I have done better about that? Maybe I'm not good enough. What do I need to do better the next time? Now, on the one hand, these could be good reflection questions to a point, but not when it consumes your entire day. And, you know, and he has a partner and she's just like, you got to let it go, honey. You know, you got to come eat dinner or let it go, you know, but when you're really hooked by it, that's when you know it's really not helpful. You know, so I do a lot of work on the, you know, helping people identify their inner critic.
Well, doctor, I mean, there's a lot of elements, right? So mm-hmm. to your point, this is just a great example. You're looking for work and, you know, and by the way, this happened more. I mean, I've been doing a lot of research and, you know, for my work as well as in just for the shows and the media. And there's a huge talk about, you know, how people today are submitting resumes, unemployment is higher. They're not getting responses because the algorithms are not doing it. And people are frustrated, like, you know, I am good. I mean, I have all this stuff, but I can't even get past the initial, you know, contact here. I can't even talk to someone to talk. I mean, back in the days, you get introduced, you meet, interview, right. You impress. That's the first good start, right? Now you don't even get past that first point, right? And so that can get people really frustrated, and especially someone who has been in a streak and a good, you know, path. And all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, what happened to me? And that could actually have a bad effect mentally and
physically.
Yeah, it
can totally affect your self-esteem. I mean, and it's exhausting. I think of my younger daughter when she graduated from college right after COVID. No jobs, you know? I mean, for young people, I mean, like a whole generation, you know, here is like, you know, internships got canceled, job offers got canceled, and it was like a numbers game. And she's like, how many jobs can you apply in LinkedIn? And you have no idea where things go to, you know? And so that's at the beginning of your career. Of course, it's very frustrating also for people who are in mid or advanced, you know, it's really exhausting. I think the key here, though, Hurricane, is that you actually have to protect your self-esteem and your sense of worthiness. And so you need to kind of diversify where you're placing your attention. So cognitively, we all are born with what we call the negativity bias. Maybe this has showed up on some of your shows in the past, but the negativity bias is basically an aspect of your attention networks in the brain that's going to focus on the negative. Like, it's going to focus on any cues or warnings or signals because, God forbid, you know, we get, you know, I don't know, attacked by a tiger, right? And so our minds are just naturally oriented to looking out for anything that can go wrong. So you have a poor job market. Guess what? Your negativity bias is really inflamed or really activated. However, I always say, God, the negativity bias is inflamed today because it's just, you know, looking at all the what ifs, nothing happens. And we actually have to catch that and protect ourselves from it and diversify where our attention goes. So that means all of these self-care things, making sure that you're working out, getting a good night's sleep, having dinner with friends, you know, don't drop that hobby. I mean, you're still going to be applying for the jobs the next day, but please don't give up your yoga class because you think, gosh, if I just spend one more hour on LinkedIn, that could make it or break it. I'm like, no, it won't. Please go to the yoga class and restore your nervous system and your attention networks, right? We really actually need to be able to switch sets. That's the only way to kind of get through it.
Well, I mean, it's funny you said that. I mean, that could be the place where you're going to meet someone and then out of discussion to get a job, right? So, but you're right. But we don't see it that way. Like, to your point, I mean, we are conditioned to always seeing like what's going to go wrong because that's just the way we are set, right? But I'm more of a positive thinker. Like, I try to find the positive in everything, cup half full versus half empty kind of concept. So I work with the mindset. But it took me a long time to get to that point. Like, where I you know, you can say a lot of things, you know, it don't faze me. It will take a little bit more to phase me because, you know, I know what my worth is. And so you build your character to that point. But again, you know, nevertheless, there is a lot of pressure. I mean, I've done a show about public speaking, you know, a couple of them, right? That's a big area where people want to be the best of the best of the best. And most of the people are fearful of standing in front of public because of this perfection thing, because they're afraid to just flub the whole thing. You know, they're not really confident enough to really like, I got this, and you know, no matter what people think, I'm going to be able to deliver no problem. So they get into the comfort zone. But a lot of it's a lot of work. And so I mean, actually, we're going to have a second part to that show. It's going to be interesting because there's more deep dive than we're going to do that. But this actually ties in the same concept, because you're striving so hard to impress people. Maybe sometimes we think we're trying to impress ourselves, like so we can avoid the critics. I think that's sometimes how I see it personally. You want to do everything so no one, like you want to be prepared,
right? Yes. And you want to preempt anything, you know. So you want to cover all of your bases, and it's an understandable way of thinking. At the same time, if you're so armored or guarded, it's going to be very hard to come across as authentic. Like, people would rather see you flub up than be perfect. And I think that's what people forget. Brené Brown talks about this, you know, we sort of like, you know, this hustling for worthiness, and it really is, it is like an addiction, actually. You know, we just get so habituated to it. And so we really, this is where I feel like actually the inner critic is helpful. So I work with a lot of people who are having to do presentations or defend their dissertations, let's say, for 6 years on something, and they're scared shitless basically to have this presentation, and it's supposed to be a celebration. I remind them, like, you know what, you've been working on this for 6 years, everybody knows what to expect, they've already been looking at all your papers, you're going to be fine, can you enjoy it, can you celebrate it, and what do you have to offer other people? So sometimes I think we need to kind of turn our attention actually to that part of you, right, that has habituated to perfectionism as a way to protect you, and have a relationship with it. It's like externalizing the perfectionism, giving that part of you a name, you know, because sometimes people's critical narratives are maybe more like a bully, like there's an inner bully, or let's say maybe an inner judge, like a Judge Judy, you know. There could be like the perpetual researcher in there has got to, you know, leave no stone unturned. What part of you is that? Can let's identify it, let's give it a name, and then start to practice recognizing, like, oh, I know why you're here, because this is really important to me, but you know what, we're going to do this a different way. Like, we don't have to pull out the whip like that. We can do this a different way.
But again, we're conditioned to a way, because I mean, people judge, and you know, that's the part that is difficult. I think that we live in a world that's very judgmental. People are always going to like try to, and we see it more than ever today because of social media. I mean, you make one mistake, you know, you could be the best of anything now, right? You could be a star, and one little thing that you do, and that's going to take a whole world of energy and critic that's going to drive it down the tubes, right? And so we're constantly like worrying about that. And I think that's a big problem, right? So one of the things that I was going to ask is that, you know, it sounds like we can have healthy ambition. There's nothing wrong with that. But we just have to prevent ourselves from falling into like more of a toxic, you know, perfectionism. Because, you know, ambition sometimes can mix in with the idea of perfection.
Yeah, well, you know, so what you're talking about is this sort of healthy ambition, or, you know, the striving for excellence that's associated with what I would say would be the more positive emotions, like aspiration and excitement. And to be able to stay in that lane, if you will, because what will happen, you know, this is even some very interesting research that there's basically like a point of diminishing returns when it comes from striving for excellence, is that you can be striving, but then what happens with perfectionists is that they start to overcorrect. They start to go over things, you know, when they don't really need to anymore, and they almost can't help it. And what that causes most likely is exhaustion and mistakes. So you really kind of want to be pretty self-aware of, you know, being in that, you know, more of really understanding your worth and your value, you're excited, and you've got something that you believe in so much that you want to share with other people. And that if you didn't share this with other people, you would be withholding from them. Like, it's actually even not about you. It's about your audience or your customer or the people that you're with, that you are in service, you know, to whatever, humanity in some way, you know. And people forget that because they turn it back on themselves. Like, I just got to get this just right. I just got to land this deal. If I don't land this deal, then I'm ruined. And, you know, and I think that could be a recipe for personal disaster.
Well, again, doctor, I mean, thank you. There's more to it. I mean, you know, we are constantly reminded of bills, and mm-hmm. Everybody that lives has to live somehow, right? And so you have these pressures, and so sometimes that also adds to the fuel. I mean, you're gonna go home, like you mentioned something about deal. You don't land a deal, you don't make a commission, whatever. The money is scarce. You got problems, financial problems. So it's like, how do we kind of balance? And that's the whole thing, is finding that balance where you do the best you can, when you can, how you do it. Make sure you check all the good marks to get there, but without going overboard. I think that's really the at least that's how I see it. Once you, to your point, you go overboard, you got to just start losing track of what really, because sometimes you get so lost in the whole mix, you don't even see, you know, where your first goal or target was, because you're just beyond that. That's a problem. But doctor, so what are some of the key patterns or common characteristics of people who actually face this dilemma of perfectionism? What are some of the traits that are very, like, across the board that you've experienced through your work?
Well, I do think that, you know, again, like going to those various types that are sort of confirmed in the research, is having to have things just right. Failure is not an option, that your self-esteem is really resting on this outcome rather than the process. I think I've just had a number of people at high levels who end up in like human resources because employees have complained about them and they had no self-awareness, or like, this company should be, you know, happy to have me. You know, I'm making things better. And meanwhile, people around you are miserable. So that's that other oriented perfectionism. So sometimes it actually comes out in that way, in interpersonal relationships. So people who are on the sort of the extreme side of perfectionism often have problems in relationship, because their expectations are so high that it's not even realistic, really. So you see that there is that sort of, you know, sometimes I have to chuckle because people will look me up, right? Perfectionists will look me up, you know, they'll be like, okay, you know, I've got to make sure I'm getting the right person here. And they'll know things about me. I'm like, how did you find that out? Oh, I found it on the internet. I'm like, oh, you did your research. And they're just trying to present themselves, you know, their intention is good. I've done my work. I know who you are. I pick you. And it's that, it's definitely that self-presentation style, right? And so I try to kind of like charm and disarm them, like, you know, just to kind of let them relax a little bit. So I feel like with perfectionists, they're pretty tense all the time. I mean, you can't really show me a relaxed perfectionist.
Ooh, that's a good question. So folks, if you're watching and listening, that's a good one. What is your take on this? I mean, just think about it for a minute. If you would know, literally just listen to what Doc said, and you would find out like whether you're on one side or the other. Well, so doctor, you know, your book highlights these things and kind of, so let's talk about the book. What's the drive? What's the, how does someone benefit from the book, and what are some of the key takeaways from the book?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So I wrote The Perfectionist Dilemma, and the subtitle is Learn the Art of Self-Compassion and Become a Happy Achiever. And it was really based on years of doing these workshops that were called, or are called, Overcoming Perfectionism Through Self-Compassion. And I do one called Befriending the Inner Critic, or We Rewire the Inner Critic. And so So over the years, I've just sort of cultivated my own method, if you will. And I call it the evolve method, because really what we're trying to do is evolve. We're trying to evolve perfectionism into something that's a little bit kinder, and healthier and more balanced. I want people to live a life of, ease and joy. We need to bring joy back into the picture. So the Evolve method, actually, again, kind of pulling in some of the stuff in my field, which is, Evolve is like embody the present moment. Like, I'm going to go back to like really helping people cultivate mindfulness and be embodied and actually connected to their bodies. Then V is, validate your experience. So many perfectionists actually didn't have the kind of positive affirmation that they needed earlier in life. They just kind of had to figure it out on their own, and then they became sort of hyper-absorbed of just, success and achievement, when really they needed somebody to say, "Wow, you're putting in so much effort. Good job." Or, give him a hug, or, "I love you." And they didn't get that, right? So a lot of the work is actually helping, them or me reflect back, or the team, or the group reflect, to validate their worthiness. That was kind of like missing somewhere along the way. We're not talking about the grandiose narcissist out there, but we're talking about people who, really want to matter and to know that they matter. So validation is an important step. And then O is, open your heart, right? So again, I start to kind of sneak in self-compassion, because it's usually a non-starter. People will say, "I don't even know what self-compassion is." And it's really actually befriending yourself and identifying these patterns and these parts, knowing where sort of they come from, how they affect your life. Are they beneficial? Are they not beneficial? And then love your inner critic. So this is always a fun one with high achievers, is to have them practice speaking to themselves in a kinder way. And Hurricane, once you ask people like what's going on in their minds, and they actually start to share what they say to themselves, they would never say out loud. It's pretty harsh.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then it's like really committing. So I got, V and evolve is, so committing to yourself. So this is where like you have to stay motivated, you need allies, but you also actually need to really be clear on what your values are and what your goals are. And people often, perfectionists have this habit of doing and undoing, doing and undoing. Stop, start, right? It's just, oh, it's not good enough, I'm gonna stop. All right, and then I start again. It's to really kind of commit to doing these practices around really self-care that they haven't been doing for the most part. And then the last E in evolve is energy. So I sneak in energy medicine, because it's also kind of, people think, "Oh, this is a little bit too left field for me. It's a little bit too woo." But honestly, it's coming back to your own energy, your energy patterns, and your nervous system, and helping people really come back to this understanding that you really need to be embodied. You need to be connected, internally, and that takes some practice. So I kind of come back around. So my two E's are kind of connected: embody the present moment and spark the energy of excellence. So,
Well,
yeah.
here's something funny about what I'm hearing right now is that I think you and I, we met somewhere in the universe before
Okay.
because our tagline is time to evolve.
Oh, yes.
So really, I guess now I know where I came from. Somehow it doesn't make sense to evolve. And frankly, if someone's watching and listening, folks, I mean, these will make your life very livable, very happy, while you can still be an achiever, because I think that's really the big difference. Who says that we have to be high achievers and sacrifice everything else?
Exactly.
That doesn't work. And frankly, I don't know, when you talk to someone who's probably younger in their age, they don't see some of the things. And sometimes with time, we get a little bit more wise, and we gain a little bit more expertise in life. And you start realizing that life is too short. Striving too hard and trying to impress people may not always work. And it doesn't matter how good you are and how well you do things, sometimes people will still look the other way, and you might be forgotten too. I mean, you have stars that actually get forgotten over time, whatever the case may be. So don't think that you're just gonna have to do this. I think in a way, we have to be, to your point, just more aware and self-compassionate, ourselves. And sometimes doing that, you can also, as you said, some of the people are so extreme that people, they don't realize that they're hurting other people around them. And that could be personal family. You might even get people that divorce. I mean, we have high divorce rates. People sometimes, you know, it's not so much narcissism as you said, but somewhere in between, before you get to that level, you can get to a point where it's like, it's not healthy. Like, I don't want to deal with this person anymore. And so there you go. Then it could also be with your children, right? And vice versa, with your parents. So there's a lot of this stuff that can happen that can really be hurtful to your own being. And finally, I mean, at the end of the day, that to your point mentioned cortisol and stress. Now you're going to affect your health. And, you know, if you lose your health, trust me, you can be all the perfectionist you want. It's not going to help you at this point. Now you're going to be in drugs and medicine and, you know, treatment. So it's not worth it. So I think it's just a matter of really realizing what to do, when to do it, how well you can do it without going extreme. And extremism in anything can be bad. Now you've thrown the word kindness in there. And I know you've written a book also about kindness. That was your first book. So let's talk about, like, I mean, how important kindness is in the balance of this whole thing to get us not to be, you know, in the world or the world of maybe perfection, but not really to be the perfectionist, because I don't think there will ever be such a thing. If anything, it will be the negative thing, which we'll try to avoid here.
Yeah, listen, we live in a culture that operates on meanness and negativity. And I mean, again, because it's very basic to the brain, is that's what gets your attention, right? And so our news feeds, everything, you know, it's very negative. We live in a lot of negativity, and I keep thinking that it's going to evolve. Sometimes it feels like it's just getting worse.
We hope so.
Right? But kindness, you know, is, you know, people, oh, that's nice and soft and sweet, but it's actually, it's a really a strong skill to have. And it's so important. And the way that, you know, when I first wrote about kindness, it was because actually my daughter got beaten up by like another girl, a senior year of high school. And I was like, what has happened to like basic kindness, and where has it gone? And so I just, like, you know, I just put my research cap on. I'm like, what does the research say about kindness? And it's just been really interesting, because there's been a lot of studies on kindness and different kinds of kindness, you know, acts of kindness or self-compassion, you know, kindness towards yourself, kindness in the workplace. Let me just tell your audience that it's a good thing to do, that it makes everything better. And whatever, like when I wrote that book, I was like, what is the most interesting thing to me about some of the research on kindness? And I think it was really, you know, some research that shows that basically how social networks work, and that basically whatever you put into your network, whether that's offline or online, like tangible or in the world, has 3 degrees of influence. So if you put something negative out there, it is going to affect, you know, person you know, the person that they know, and the person that person knows, right? And it doesn't matter if it's a positive or a negative. But the thing is with negativity, it's so rapid fire and it spreads so quickly that we actually have to double down on our efforts of inserting positivity and kindness in the world. Like, we actually need an army, because one person can actually ruin things for everybody. But you get some allies and you start doing acts of kindness, it changes not only your sort of physical health, but the interpersonal relationships. And it sounds so obvious, but people need to be reminded.
Well, listen, that's a mission as well. We do want people to be kind. And frankly, I think it's an energy. And the more you spread of it, the more you're going to get back. And, you know, it just feels good. You know, I think when you're mad, it doesn't, you can see it's not working. It's just bad. You know, I think we all have experienced being mad at a point of our lives. And, you know, that's like when you're having pain, it's not good. You know, it's not really good for you.
Yeah, it's important to recognize that though, Hurricane. You know, so, I mean, I say that kindness is love in action. And if you're mad or angry or upset, by all means, name it. Because I think one of the things that we try to do is we try to avoid, you know, what's painful and hard. But actually, with compassion, which is similar to kindness, I mean, compassion is connecting to the suffering in another person or people, is we want to spread that goodwill. Right? It really actually has an impact and it makes a difference. So I don't know what else to say about it. It's like, we just got to do it.
No, well, I think it's a beautiful message. I mean, it may be, you know, somehow, you know, maybe more of a movie-like style, you know, message. But at the end of the day, I think it's okay. We want people to at least be aware that, hey, be kind. You know, it doesn't take a lot. I mean, be thankful, be good with empathy, you know, have empathy of other people, you know. Like, think about this. Would you like those things that are negative being given to you? No, nobody wants that, right? If you start thinking that, like, how would I feel if someone treated me this way or beating me or whatever, right? It's not going to be good. So let me not, you know, experience, like, I don't want to experience it. Let me not give someone that experience. And I think it's easier to be kind than being otherwise. I mean, even smiling can be kindness, right? I mean,
absolutely.
You look at somebody, I mean, actually, it's funny. I was watching a reel earlier and it just came out of my feed. And it's funny because, like, this guy's just walking around and he's just, like, making good comments to people, like giving them good compliments. Hey, your dress is nice and this and that. And so, and you'll see, like, when he approaches these people, they look at him like they're ready to fight. And as soon as he gives that question, oh, thank you so much. And they smile like big. I mean, and so it's amazing. Like, one little action can bring some happiness to someone and it changes the dynamics. So
absolutely. It really does make a difference. And it makes a difference in the workplace and in schools and home and your family. I always tell people at the end of the day, you know, instead of asking how did your day go, because people will be like, oh, right, there'll be all the complaints. It's like, what went well today? What surprised you? What delighted you today? It totally shifts the energy of a conversation. Because I agree with you, kindness is energy, love is energy, and we just need to practice it more. We have to offset that negativity bias that's baked in with cultivating that positivity bias. Like you said that you're an optimist, you've kind of learned to be that over the years, but it really is a daily practice.
Oh yeah, it takes a lot too,
yeah.
Especially with everything that's around you. But the more you have to be conscious about it and aware. And I think awareness is a key, and you mentioned that earlier. But so doctor, question now, in your work and in the research and that you're aware of, is there a difference in generations? Because I think the previous generations, or maybe Gen Z versus Gen X versus, you know, maybe the baby boomers, are going to be completely different in how this perfectionism world is, because I think there is maybe a little less of that today. Maybe that's just, you know, the impression I have, you know.
There's a little less of what today?
Of perfectionism in the generations. So, for example, my kids are not I can just say, they're not as meticulous about doing things the way, for example, I did, or, you know, even though I was like, yeah, you got to do this, you got to do that. So I was maybe more sharp and I have those rules. They don't, they're rebel. they don't follow that. Is there such a thing in the studies on the research?
Well, actually, I think what the research is showing is that perfectionism is on the rise and it's trending up. And the study that looked at 30 years of data on perfectionism is actually Thomas Curran, who wrote The Perfectionist Trap. He's the one who crunched the numbers. And when he talks, he says that in around 2012, there was just this like uptick in perfectionism, especially socially prescribed perfectionism. And that's about 4 years after smartphones entered the marketplace. Yeah. So that would be about how long it would take for behavior to really start to sort of infiltrate right into the population. So there's no causation here, but it's an interesting relationship that that sort of the real uptick in rates of perfectionism started about 4 years after smartphones were, you know, given into the hands of teenagers.
But in your world, I mean, that is a fact. Because I, you know, with Dr. Heim, which we have a regular show about, you know, mental health, that has been a proven thing. To your point, it actually matches to your, information piece. That is actually the point when it was introduced in the world. These smartphones have caused, you know, a real social problem, you know, dilemma, and it's affecting the new generations more. And this leads me to what we kind of briefly talked about earlier, is that today in social media, you see a lot more of like how you have to look. You know, you see a lot more about success, luxury. You know, if you're not driving this car, you don't have this bag, you don't dress this way, you don't have this brand, you know, all this stuff. So people are like, you know, I want to look like that. And by the way, that is global. I can tell you this is not just absolutely in the U.S. or Canada.
No, I understand.
Everywhere. I mean, I just came from overseas. That's the same. Doesn't matter, because now it's access, you know, free access to information on the same platform. So now I know, for example, in Australia next year, they're going to stop, you know, and I think there's other places that they are contemplating the idea of limiting the age of using platforms such as TikTok and all these things, YouTube and all these social platforms, because they don't want the introduction of these, you know, problems to the younger folks, and therefore
right, delay it as long as you can, basically.
Well, once you mature a little bit more, I guess you'll have a better and you'll have, I mean, it's studies well proven that this is a problem. The science, as Dr. Ham will refer to it, the science is real.
Yes.
So it's amazing. So thank you. I mean, I wanted to just to see if that was a difference in the generation, because I think we were raised back in the days, at least in my time, you know, that you got to do certain things. This is how you do it. I didn't realize that is actually just as bad with the new generation with the social piece.
Yeah. So I'm probably just a little bit older than you, but I've got kids, you know, who've graduated from college. And I would say that what I really appreciate about the younger generation is, in a way, they're more open. They're more open to diversity. They're more aware of a lot of things. And yet at the same time, perfectionism, especially around achievement and goals, that's where it's really kind of ticked up, you know. And if some people have a more balanced view about achievement and getting grades, you know, God love them, actually, because I always told my kids, I never look at their, I have no idea what their SAT scores were. I'm like, do you know that there's zero correlation between your SAT score and success in life? I don't care what you get on your tests, you know. But I probably was unusual in that regard, you know. Because there isn't a correlation. But so I think the younger generations are really interesting. I feel like they're much more open in a lot of ways, less rigid than maybe like the boomers or Gen X's, you know. I mean, I'm on the cusp of the Gen X. It's interesting. I don't know, you know, every generation is a little different.
I'm a Gen X, and, you know, again, like I said, I mean, my mom raised me very, you know, like everything's got to be done. There's goals. You got to do this. You got to be successful. And, you know, I kind of lived with that. So I kind of became that, you know, also, like, I wanted that. I had the same expectations, but I saw that my kids are not as rigid as I was. So they kind of more like, you know, I do my thing. They go with the flow. They're less stressed in a way. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't pay mind to the idea, as you said, like it's more on the achievement side, on their own thing. So they have their own way to look at it. And you're right. In today, it's like there's a certain way to do things that is expected from them. And so there's that peer pressure that we hear all the time, especially in the high school, you know, era. I mean, days, I mean, that's big. I mean, my kids just, well, in college now, but at the time, you know, that was a big deal. I mean, like, well, my friends are doing this. My friends are doing that. And it became like, you're supposed to be exactly like that. And like, you don't need to conform with them. I love what you said about like, there is no correlation that your intelligence and intellect does not have to do anything with the metrics out there. I mean, yes, there is some of it, but it's not like an indicator that you're going to fail. Many people, you know, had, and maybe success stories have not, you know, master turn things in the school world, and they became the greatest sensations in the world for a lot of areas, right?
Exactly.
So we have those. And so, so to your point, I mean, we don't have to strive too hard, but we have to find that balance.
It's all about balance in the end. And having that self-awareness that you might have a tendency, or you might have a trait, or that, and that, that it serves a purpose, like it serves a need, right? So I try to really have a lot of compassion for people who struggle with perfectionism. It's like, it's really serving some need. Let's understand what the underlying need is. What's the unmet need? What is the fear? Can we start working from that place, from a non-judgmental kind place, to help that evolve so that you can relax a little bit, have more fun, diversify the things that you actually enjoy in life. And it can't just be this one thing, right? You know, like, you know, I always say, if your personality is like a pie chart, like it just can't be one thing. You have a lot of little slivers in there, you know, what are those? So
again, you know, this is your work and you're helping people. So my next question, or at least my next, you know, thing here, point is, you work with people. So how can people work with you? And are you doing this in terms of like a coaching, or just, you know, sessions? Uh-huh. Or what kind of programs do you offer? And is it online only? Can they see you physically? So let's talk about your work, and that's beyond the book. I mean, just like how you can help people. I mean, you do it in the show, for example. This is helpful. Now people can listen to it and at least get some of it. Hopefully they get the book. Because I do want to say this. Your book sounds like something that can be used literally in all HR, you know, trainings. Because I think if we can go through that this concept here, I think we'll evolve at work too. So all the people that are in leadership roles and stuff, they can actually be well prepared to deal with this.
Well, it might be my
this.
Next book is actually, you know, dealing with perfectionism in the workplace. I don't know. We'll see. But I've been thinking about
it. All right. Well, again, you already have one, because I do see the value of this as even not full, but like some of the components to be part of the training.
No, absolutely. It's the same approach. No matter the sort of the age or the context, but I actually just completed finished up my first producing my first online digital course called Rewire Your Inner Critic, and people can come to my website tarakusno.com and you'll see the tab for the course. They can sign up to do that, and I do offer through that monthly open office hour coaching calls. I do have a small private practice, coaching practice on the side. I work part-time at Harvard University's Counseling Center and then part-time at private practice. I have a new Substack, so that's been really fun. And I've really actually had to practice sort of calming my own perfectionism, like, how the heck am I, how does this work? But I have a new publication called The Peaceful Perfectionist. So I would love for people to come and check that out. And that's also where I talk about some of the other things that I do. And then, of course, I have free Happy Achiever tools, and they're on my book website. So you can go to perfectionistdilemma.com and download those free tools. And it's sort of like a handful of my favorite coping skills. So
it looks like there's a lot of access to you. So excuse, folks, if you're watching or listening and you do want to, you know, get a best, or if you know someone who's really struggling, because that's the other thing. Sometimes it's not about just us. I think we all know someone who has a perfectionism problem, you know, so, and it's not a problem, but you know, it's someone who has the challenge. Exactly. So that's a better word, you know, but really it's around us and we can see it. I mean, sometimes you go to places and you can see someone, you can go to an office and see someone that's like, oh, this guy is tense, or this lady is a little tense, you know, and you can see some of the traits and the characteristics that we covered today. So I mean, you might not say, hey, listen, I would love to recommend this book for you, but you never know. You can have a decent way to have discussions. I mean, but again, you know what to do, folks. You know how to operate in your own realm and worlds, but the idea is the more we can spread this message and assist with people, you know, to see them strive better, but without, you know, the extremism, you know, and hopefully get that balance and self-awareness and self-care and self-compassion, right? So, doctor, we're about the hour here. So what would you leave our audiences with in terms of a few words of wisdom that they can take to the bank right now with?
Oh my gosh. I just want to say it to every single person is that you matter, your existence matters, that you've come to this world with these gifts that you need to share with others. Like, do not deprive us of your beauty, you know, and your gifts, that you matter. And that's really my message. I mean, people matter, and they need to know that they matter. So just share all your wisdom and goodness with other people.
Listen, that's powerful. And I think, yes, that's let's take it to the bank, folks. And if you meet someone, tell them that they matter, because I think everybody does. And we should all spread that message. And yet, let's all evolve together. Well, doctor, thank you so much for being with us, for sharing your insights, your book, and all the access to you. And then we'll have that, of course, on the description of the show so people can connect directly with you. That being said, I'm Hurricane H, folks. I hope you enjoyed this particular episode. The show is for you. Let's really take as much as you can and do connect with doctor. That's about it for us. I'm your host, Hurricane H. We'll be talking soon in the Danish show on the topic. Bye for now.